stalagmites. "This is right under the city," he said. "How come we've never heard of it?"
"Good question," said the Dean. "The man who built the cellar must have seen it."
Rincewind tried to think. "It wasn't here, then," he said.
"You said these stalag things took thousands of..."
"They probably weren't here last month, but now they've been here for thousands of years," said Rincewind. He hiccuped. "It's like your tower," he said. "Taller on the outside."
"Eh?"
"Probably only works here," said Rincewind. "The more geography you've got, the less history. Ever notice that? More space, less time. I bet it only took a second or two for this place to be here for thousands of years, see? Shorter on the outside. Makes perfect pence."
"I don't think I've drunk enough beer to understand that," said the Dean. Something nudged him in the back of the legs. He looked down at the luggage. It was one of his habits to come up so close behind people that when they looked down they felt seriously overfeated. "All this," he added. The wizards grew quieter as Rincewind led them onward. He wasn't sure who was leading him. Still, no worries.
End of side 15. Side 16.
Contrary to the usual procedures, it began to grow lighter. Although the proliferation of luminous fungi or iridescent crystals in deep caves, where the torchlessly improvident hero needs to see, is one of the most obvious intrusions of narrative causality into the physical universe. In this case, the rocks were glowing, not from some mysterious inner light, but simply as though the sun were shining on them, just after dawn. There are other imperatives that operate on the human brain. One says, the bigger the space, the softer the voice, and refers to the natural tendency to speak very, very quietly when stepping into somewhere huge. So when Arch-Chancellor Rincewind stepped out into the big cave, he said, "Struth, it's bloody big," in a low whisper. The Dean, however, shouted, "Cooey!" because there's always one. Stalactites crowded the cave here too, and in the very centre a gigantic stalactite had almost touched its mirror image stalagmite. The air was chokingly hot.
"This isn't right," said Rincewind.
Plink! They spotted the source of the noise eventually. A tiny trickle was making its way down the side of the stalactite and forming droplets that fell a few feet to the stalagmite. Another drop formed while they watched, and hung there. One of the wizards clambered up the dry slope and peered at it.
"It's not moving," he said. "The trickle's drying up. I think it's evaporating."
The Arch-Chancellor turned to Rincewind.
"Well, we've followed you this far, mate," he said. "What now?"
"I think I could do with another beer."
"There's none left, mate."
Rincewind looked desperately round the cave, and then at the huge translucent mass of limestone in front of him. It was definitely pointy. It was also in the centre of the cave. It had a certain inevitability about it. Odd, really, that something like this would form down here, shining away like a pearl in an oyster. The ground trembled again. Up there, people would already be getting thirsty, cursing the windmills as only an Exian could curse. The water was gone, and that was very bad, and when the beer ran out, people would really get angry. The wizards were all waiting for him to do something. All right, start with the rock. What did he know about rocks and caves in these parts? There was a curious freedom at a time like this. He was going to be in real trouble, whatever he did, so he might as well give this a try.
"I need some paint," he said.
"What for?"
"For what I need," said Rincewind.
"There's young Salad," said the Dean. "He's a bit of an arty blagger. Let's go and kick his door down."
"And bring some more beer," Rincewind called after them.
Neelet patted Rincewind on the shoulder.
"Are you going to do some magic?" she said.
"I don't know if it counts as magic here," said Rincewind. "If it doesn't work, stand well back."
"Is it going to be dangerous then?"
"No. I might have to start running without looking where I'm going, but
this rock's warm, have you noticed?"
She touched it.
"I see what you mean.
I was just thinking, supposing someone was in a country who shouldn't be there, what would it do?"
"Oh, the watch would catch him, I expect."
"No, no, not the people. What would the land do? I think I need another drink." It made more sense then.
"Okay, here we are. We couldn't find much, but there's some whitewash and some red paint and a tin of stuff which might be black paint or it could be tar oil."
The wizards hurried up. "Not much in the way of brushes, though." Rincewind picked up a brush that looked as though it had once been used to whitewash a very rough wall, and then to clean the teeth of some large creature, possibly a crocodile. He'd never been any good at art, and this is a distinction quite hard to achieve in many education systems. Basic artistic skills and a familiarity with occult calligraphy are part of a wizard's early training, yet in Rincewind's fingers chalk broke and pencils shattered. It was probably due to a deep distrust of getting things down on paper when they were doing all right where they were. Nielet handed him a tin of funnel web. Rincewind drank deeply, and then dipped the brush in what might have been black paint, and essayed a few upturned V's on the rock, and some circles under the lines, with three dots in a V, and a friendly little curve in each one. He took another deep draught of the beer, and saw what he was doing wrong. It was no good trying to be strictly true to life here. What he had to go for was an impression. He sloshed wildly at the stone, humming madly under his breath. "Anyone guess what it is yet?" he said over his shoulder.
"Looks a bit modern to me," said the Dean.
But Rincewind was into the swing of it now. Any fool could just copy what he saw, except possibly Rincewind. But surely the whole point was to try and paint a picture that moved, that definitely expressed definitely expressed it, anyway. You went the way the paint and the colour wanted you to go. "You know," said Nielet, "the way the light falls on it and everything, it could be a group of wizards." Rincewind half-closed his eyes. Perhaps it was the way that the shadows moved, but he had to admit he'd done a really good job. He slapped some more paint on.
"Looks like they're almost coming out of the stone," said someone behind him, but the voice sounded muffled.
He felt as though he was falling into a hole. He'd had the sensation before, although usually it was when he was falling into a hole. The walls were fuzzy, as though they were streaking past him at a tremendous rate. The ground shook.
"Oh, are we moving?" he said.
"Feels like it, doesn't it?" said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind. "But we're standing still."
"Moving while standing still," muttered Rincewind, and giggled. "That's a good one."
He squinted happily at the beer can.
"You know," he said, "I can't stomach more than a pint or two of the ale we have at home, but this stuff is like drinking lemonade. Has anyone got that meat pie?"
As loudly as a thunderstorm under the bed, but as softly as two soufflés colliding, past and present ran into one another. They contained a lot of people.
"What's this?
Dean?"
"Yes, you're not the Dean. How dare you say that? Who are you?" "Wook! Stone, the cows, there's a monkey in here."
"No, no, no, I didn't say that. He said that."
"Arch-Chancellor?"
"Yes,
yes." "What, how many of you are there?"
The darkness became a deep purple, shading to violet.
"Will you all stop shouting and listen to me?"
To Rincewind's amazement, they did.
"Look, the walls are getting closer. This place is trying not to exist."
And having done his duty to the community, he turned and ran over the shaking rock floor. After a couple of seconds, the luggage passed him, which was always a bad sign. He heard the voices behind him. Wizards had a hard job accepting the term clear and present danger. They liked the kind you could argue about. But there is something about a rapidly descending ceiling that intrudes into the awareness of even the most quarrelsome.
"I'll save you, Mrs. Whitlow."
"Up the tunnel."
"How fast are those walls closing in, would you say?"
"Shut up and run."
Now Rincewind was passed by a large, red, furry kangaroo. The librarian's erratic morphism, having briefly turned him into a red stalactite, as an obviously successful shape for surviving in caves, had finally taken on board the fact that it would make for a terminally lengthy survival in a cave that was rapidly getting smaller, and had flipped into a local morphic field built for speed. Man, luggage, and kangaroo piled through the hole into the cellar and ended in a heap against the opposite side. There was a rumbling behind them, and wizards and women were fired out into the cellar with some speed, several of them landing on Rincewind. Behind the wall, the rock groaned and creaked, expelling these alien things in what Rincewind thought was a geological chunder. Something flew out of the hole and hit him on the ear, but this was only a minor problem compared to the meat pie, which came out trailing mushy peas and tomato sauce and hit him in the mouth. It wasn't actually all that bad. The ability to ask questions like, "Where am I and who is the I that is asking?" is one of the things that distinguishes mankind from, say, cuttlefish. Although, of course, it's not the most obvious thing, and there are, in fact, some beguiling similarities, particularly the tendency to try to hide behind a big cloud of ink in difficult situations. The wizards from Unseen University, being perhaps the intellectual cream, or certainly the cerebral yoghurt of their generation, passed through this stage within minutes. Wizards are very adept at certain ideas. One minute you're arguing over the shape of a duck's head, and the next there are people telling you you've been inside a rock for thousands of years because time goes slower on the inside. This presents no great problem for a man who has found his way to the lavatory at Unseen University, the one on the first floor with the curious gravitational anomaly. But there were more important questions as they sat around the table in BU.
"Is there anything to eat?"
said Ridcully.
"It's the middle of the night, sir."
"You mean we missed dinner?"
"Thousands of years of dinners, Arch-Chancellor."
"Really?
Better start catching up then, Mr. Stibbons. Still,
nice little place you've got here, Arch-Chancellor."
Ridcully pronounced the word very carefully in order to accentuate the lowercase a. Arch-Chancellor Rincewind gave him a fraternal nod.
"Thank you."
"For a colony, of course. I dare say you do your best."
"Why, thank you, Mustron. I'd be happy to show you our tower later on."
"Oh, it does look rather small."
"So people say."
"Rincewind. Rincewind? Name rings a faint bell," said Ridcully.
"We came looking for Rincewind, Arch-Chancellor," said Ponder patiently.
"Is he? Done well for himself, then. Fresh air made a man of him, I see."
"No, sir. Ours is the skinny one with the bad beard and the floppy hat, sir. You remember the one sitting over there?"
Rincewind raised a hand diffidently.
Me, he said.
Ridcully sniffed.
"Fair enough. What's that thing you're playing with, man?"
Rincewind held up the bull roarer.
"It came with you out of the cave," he said. "What were you doing with it?"
"Oh, some toy the librarian found," said Ponder.
"All sorted out, then," said Ridcully. "I say, this beer's good, isn't it? Very drinkable. Yes, I'm sure there's a lot we can learn from one another, Arch-Chancellor. You from us rather more than us from you, of course. Perhaps we could set up a student exchange, that sort of thing."
"Good idea.
You can have six of mine in exchange for a decent lawnmower. Ours is broken."
The Arch-Chancellor is trying to say that getting back might be rather hard, sir," said Ponder. "Apparently things ought to have changed now we're here, but they haven't."
"Your Rincewind seem to think that bringing you blokes over here would make it rain," said Bill,
"but it hasn't."
Vroom, vroom, vroom. "Oh, do stop playing with that thing, Rincewind," said Ridcully.
"Well,
Bill, it's obvious, isn't it? As more experienced wizards than you, we naturally know plenty of ways of making it rain. No problem there." Vroom, vroom, vroom. "Look, lad, take that thing outside, will you?"
The librarian was sitting at the top of the tin tower with a leaf over his head.
"Something odd, see?" said Rincewind, dangling the bull roarer from its string. "I've only got to wiggle my hand a bit, and it swings right round."
"Ooh!"
The librarian sneezed.
"Whoop!"
"There, now you're some sort of large bird," said Rincewind. "You are in a bad way, aren't you? Still, once I tell them your name..." The librarian changed shape and moved fast. There was a very short period of time in which a lot happened.
"Ah," said Rincewind calmly when it seemed to be over. "Well, let us start with what we know. I can't see. The reason I can't see is that my robe is hanging over my eyes. From this I can deduce that I am upside down. You are gripping my ankles. Correction, one ankle. So obviously you are holding me upside down. We are at the top of the tower. This means..."
He fell silent.
"All right, let's start again," he said. "Let's start by me not telling anyone your name."
The librarian let go. Rincewind dropped a few inches onto the planks of the tower.
"You know, that was a really mean trick you just did," he said.
"Oh,
we'll say no more about it, shall we?"
Rincewind looked up at the big empty sky. It ought to be raining. He'd done everything he was supposed to do, hadn't he? And all that had happened was that the faculty of UU was down there being condescending about everything. It wasn't even as if they could do a rainmaking spell. For one of those to work, you needed some rain around to start with. In fact, it was prudent to make sure that some heavy-looking clouds were being blown in your direction. And if it wasn't raining, then probably those terrible currents they talked about were still around too. It wasn't a bad country. They were big on hats. They were big on big hats. He could save up and buy a farm on the Never Never and watch sheep. After all, they fed themselves, and they made more sheep. All you had to do was pick the wool off occasionally. The luggage had probably settled down to being a sheepdog. Except that there wasn't any more water. No more sheep, no more farms. Mad and Crocodile Crocodile, the lovely ladies Darlene and Letitia, Remorse and his horses. All those people had shown him how to find the things you could eat without throwing up too often. All drying up and blowing away. Him, too.
G'day.
Ook. Oh, no, Rincewind moaned.
Throat a bit parched.
Look, you're not supposed to...
It's all right. I have an appointment down in the city. There's been a fight over the last bottle of beer. However, let me assure you of my personal attention at all times.
Well, thank you. When it's time to stop living, I will certainly make death my number one choice. Death faded. The cheek of him. Turning up like that. We're not dead yet, shouted Rincewind to the burning sky. There's lots we could do. If we could get to the hub, we could cut loose a big iceberg and tow it here, and that'd give us plenty of water. If we could get to the hub. Where there's hope, there's life, I'll have you know. I'll find a way. Somewhere there's a way of making rain. Death had gone. Rincewind swung the bull roarer menacingly. And don't come back!
Ooh!
The librarian gripped Rincewind's arm and sniffed the air. Then Rincewind caught the smell, too. Rincewind spoke a fairly primitive language, and it had no word for that smell you get after rain, other than that smell you get after rain. Anyone trying to describe the smell would have to flounder among words like moisture, heat, vapour, and with a following wind, exhalation. Nevertheless, there was the smell you get after rain. In this burning land, it was like a brief jewel in the air. Rincewind whirled the piece of wood again. It made noise out of all proportion to the movement, and there was that smell again. He turned it over. It was still just a wooden oval. There weren't any markings on it. He gripped the end of the string and whirled the thing experimentally a few more times. "Did you notice that when it did this," he began. It wouldn't stop. He couldn't lower his arm. "I think it wants to be spun," he said.
"Ook!
You think I should?
Ook!
That's very helpful.
Ooh!"
The librarian ducked. Rincewind spun. He couldn't see the wood now because the string was getting longer with each turn. A blur curved through the air some way from the tower, getting further away with each spin. The sound of it was a long, drawn-out drone. When it was well out over the city, it exploded in a thunderclap. But something still whirled on the end of the line, like a tight silver cloud, throwing out a trail of white particles that made a spiral that sped out wider and wider. The librarian was flat on his face with his hands over his head. Air roared up the side of the tower, carrying dust, wind, heat, and budgerigars. Rincewind's robe flapped around his chin. Letting go was unthinkable. He wasn't even sure if he could, until it wanted him to. Thin as smoke now, the spiral drifted out into the heat haze. And out over the red desert, and the unheeding kangaroos, and as the tail of it flew out over the coast and into the wall of storms, the warring airs melted peacefully together. The clouds stopped their stately spin around the last continent, boiled up in confusion and thunderheads, reversed their direction, and began to fall inwards. And the string whipped out of Rincewind's hand, stinging his fingers. The bull roarer flew away, and he didn't see it fall. This may have been because he was still pirouetting, but at last gravity overcame momentum and he fell full length on the boards.
"Oh, I think my feet have caught fire," he muttered.
The dead heat hung on the land like a shroud. Clancy, the stockman, wiped the sweat off his brow very thoroughly and wrung out the rag into an empty jam tin. The way things were going, he'd be glad of it. Then, carrying the tin with care, he climbed back down the windmill's ladder.
"The war's fine, boss. There's just no bloody water," he said.
Remorse shook his head.
"Look at them horses," he said. "Look at the way they're lying down, will you? That's not good."
This is it, Clancy. We've battled through thick and thin, and this is too thick altogether by half. We may as well cut their poor bloody throats for the meat that's on them. A gust of wind took his hat off for him and blew a lash of scent across the wilted mulga bushes. A horse raised his head. Clouds were pouring across the sky, rolling and boiling across each other like waves on a beach, so black that in the middle they were blue, lit by occasional flashes.
"What the hell's that?"
said Clancy. The horse stood up awkwardly and stumbled to the rusted trough under the windmill. Under the clouds, dragging across the land, the air shimmered silver. Something hit Remorse's head. He looked down. Something went plut in the red dust by his boot, leaving a little crater.
"That is water, Clancy," he said. "It's bloody water dropping out of the bloody sky."
They stared at one another with their mouths open, as around them the storm hit and the animals stirred and the red dust turned into mud which spattered them up to their waists. This was no ordinary rainstorm. This was the wet. As Clancy said later, the second best bloody thing that happened that day was that they were near high ground. The best bloody thing was that with all the corks on their hats, they were able to find the bloody things later on. There'd been a debate about having this year's regatta in Didja Bring a Beer along, given the drought. But it was a tradition. A lot of people came into town for it. Besides, the organisers had discussed it long and hard all the previous evening in the bar of the Pastoral Hotel, and had concluded that no worries, she'll be right. There were classes for boats pulled by camels, boats optimistically propelled by sails, and a high spot of the event, skiffs propelled by the simple expedient of the crew cutting the bottoms out, gripping the sides, and running like hell. It always got a good laugh. It was while two teams were trotting upriver in the semi-final that the spectators noticed the black cloud pouring over Semaphore Hill like boiling jam.
"Bushfire," said someone. "Bushfire'd be white. Come on."
That was the thing about fire. If you saw one, everyone went to put it out. Fire spread like wildfire. But as they turned away, there was a scream from the riverbed. The teams rounded the bend neck and neck, carrying their boats at record-breaking speed. They reached the slipway, collided in their efforts to get up, made it to the top, locked together, and collapsed in splinters and screams.
"Stop the regatta!" panted one of the coxes. The river! The river!"
But by then everyone could see it. Around the bend, travelling slowly because it was pushing in front of it a huge log jam of bushes, carts, rocks, and trees, was the flood. It thundered past, and the mobile dam slid on, scything the river bottom free of all obstruction. Behind it, foaming water filled the river from bank to bank. They cancelled the regatta. A river full of water made a mockery of the whole idea. The university's gates had burst open, and now the angry mob was in the grounds and hammering on the walls. Above the din, the wizard searched feverishly through the books.
"Well, have you got something like Maxwell's impressive separator?" said Ridcully. "What's that do?" said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind.
"Unmixes two things, like sugar and sand, for example. Uses Nanny's demons."
"Nano-demons, possibly," murmured Ponder wearily. "Oh, like Bonza Charlie's Butte Sith. Yeah, we got that."
Parallel evolution. Fine. Dig it out, man."
Arch-Chancellor Rincewind nodded at one of the wizards and then broke into a grin.
"Are you thinking about it working on salt?" he said.
"Exactly. One spell, one bucket of seawater, no more problem."
That's not exactly true," said Ponder Stibbons.
"Sounds perfect to me, man."
"It takes a great deal of magic, sir, and the demons take about a fortnight per pint, sir."
"Ah, a significant point, Mr. Stibbons."
"Yes, sir.
However, just because it wouldn't work does not mean it was a bad idea. I wish they'd stop that shouting."
The shouting outside stopped.
"Perhaps they heard you, sir," said Ponder. "Bang, bang, bang." "Are they throwing stuff onto the roof?" said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind.
"No, that's probably just rain," said Ridcully. "Now, I suppose you've tried evaporating..."
He realised that no one was listening. Everyone was looking up. Now the individual thuds had merged into a steady hammering, and from outside came the sound of wild cheering. The wizards struggled in the doorway and finally fought their way outside, where water was pouring off the roof in a solid sheet and cutting a channel in the lawn. Arch-Chancellor Rincewind stopped abruptly and reached out to the water like a man not sure if the stove is hot.
"Out of the sky?" he said.
He pushed his way out through the liquid curtain. Then he took off his hat and held it upside down to catch the rain. The crowd had filled the university grounds and spilled out into the surrounding streets. Every face was turned upwards.
"And those dark things?"
Arch-Chancellor Rincewind called out.
"They are the clouds, Arch-Chancellor. There's a hell of a lot of them."
There were. They piled up over the tower in an enormous, spreading black thunderhead. A couple of people looked down long enough to see the group of soaked wizards, and there were some cheers, and suddenly they were the new centre of attention, and being picked up and carried shoulder high.
"They think we did it,"
shouted Arch-Chancellor Rincewind as he was borne aloft.
"Who's to say we didn't?"
shouted Ridcully, tapping the side of his nose conspiratorially.
Someone
began. Ridcully didn't even look round. "Shut up, Mr. Stibbons," he said.
"Shutting up, sir."
"Can you hear that thunder?"
said Ridcully as a rumble rolled across the city. "We'd better take cover." The clouds above the tower were rising like water against a dam. Ponder said afterwards the fact that the BU tower was very short and extremely tall at the same time might have been the problem, since the storm was trying to go around it, over it, and through it, all at the same time. From the ground, the clouds seemed to open up slowly, leaving a glowing, spreading chimney filled with the blue haze of electrical discharges, and pounced. One solid blue bolt hit the tower at every height all at once, which is technically impossible. Pieces of wood and corrugated iron roared into the air and rained down across the city. Then there was just a sizzling and the rushing of rain. The crowd stood up again cautiously, but the fireworks were over.
"That's what we call lightning," said Ridcully.
Arch-Chancellor Rincewind got up and tried to brush mud off his robe, then found out why you cannot do this.
"It's not usually as big as that, though,"
Ridcully went on.
"Oh, good."
There was a clank from the steaming debris where the tower had stood, and a sheet of metal was pushed aside. Slowly, with much mutual aid and many false starts, two blackened figures emerged. One of them was still wearing a hat, which was on fire, although the rain was putting out the flames. Leaning against one another, weaving from side to side, they approached the wizards. One of them said,
"Ook,"
very quietly, and fell backwards. The other one looked blearily at the two arch-chancellors and saluted. This caused a spark to leap from its fingers and burn its ear.
Rincewind, it said. "And what have you been up to while we've been doing all this hard work, pray?"
said Ridcully. Rincewind looked around very slowly. Occasional little blue streaks crackled in his beard.
"Well, that all seemed to go pretty well, really, all things considered," he said,
and fell full length into a puddle. It rained. And after that, it rained. Then it rained some more. The clouds were stacked like impatient charter flights over the coast, low on fuel, jockeying for position, and raining. Above all, raining. Flood water roared down the rocks and scoured out the ancient muddy water holes. A species of tiny shrimps, whose world for thousands of years had been one small hole under a stone, were picked up and carried wholesale into a lake that was spreading faster than a man could run. There had been fewer than 1,000 of them. There were a lot more next day. Even if the shrimps had been able to count how many, they were far too busy to bother. In the new estuaries, rich in sudden silt and unexpected food, a few fish began the experiment of a salt-free diet. The mangroves started their stop-motion conquests of the new mudbanks. It went on raining, then it rained some more. After that, it rained. It was some days later. The ship rose and fell gently by the dock. The water around it was red with suspended silt, in which a few leaves and twigs floated.
"A week or two to No Thing Fjord, and we're practically home," said Ridcully.
"Practically on the same continent, anyway," said the Dean.
"Quite an interesting long vacation, really,"
said the lecturer in recent runes.
"Probably the longest ever," said Ponder. "Did Mrs. Whitlow like her stateroom?"
"I, for one, will quite enjoy bunking down in the hold," said the senior wrangler loyally.
"The bilges, actually," said Ponder. "The hold's full of opals, beer, sheep, wool, and bananas."
"Where's the librarian?"
said Ridcully. "In the hold, sir."
"Yes. I suppose it was silly of me to ask. Still, nice to see him his old self again."
"I think it may have been the lightning, sir. He's certainly very lively now."
and Rincewind sat on the luggage down on the dock. Somehow he felt something should be happening. The worst time in your life was when nothing much was going on,